WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us. Sir, how are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome and good evening. You are tuned into Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. My name is Kevin Tachi, and I'm your host and guide until 8 p.m. this evening. Now, our show doesn't officially kick off until after we check in one final time on the roadways, but then we do our traditional conversation at the beginning of the program with the State House report. This gives us an opportunity to speak with state senators, state representatives, and occasionally we get a constitutional officer, whether it's the attorney general or the auditor or even the governor or lieutenant governor. We are privy to be able to have a conversation depending on what the latest issue or item is. We look forward to that. Well, joining us this evening is State Senator Mike Brady, and he's going to chat with us in regards to the upcoming budget discussion that the Senate is on tap to have probably in about 2 weeks. Now, I think this week there'll be the release of the Senate budget. As you know, the House went through their process a couple of weeks ago. Now the Senate is up. So we'll talk with the senator about that. We'll also get a take on some of the committees that he's on and some of the things that he is working on for his district. Then we'll speak with Joe Nijame. Joe happens to be a senior about to graduate from Duxbury High School, and he has something that's really cool. He actually found a way to join a platform, a YouTube platform called TEDx Talk, and talk a little bit about confidence and humility. Wait till you have a chance to meet this young gentleman and what his purpose is in regards to this particular discussion that he had, that he was able to be granted to an audience of nearly 30 million folks who subscribe to this YouTube channel. We'll talk to Joe in just a couple of minutes. Hour number two, we will speak with award-winning documentarian, actually won a New England Emmy, Newby Rateau. He's a regular guest on this radio program, and the idea is to have Newby on to talk a little bit about the Derek Chauvin verdict that came down a couple of weeks ago. This, of course, the verdict that was involved in the death of George Floyd. Not only was America, but the world was watching to see what the verdict would be. We'll talk with Newby about that and also talk with him about the idea that there are going to be discussions further, as I believe that Derek Chauvin and his attorneys will fight this. They will appeal this verdict, this decision. So we'll talk with him about that. And then finally, we'll speak with best-selling author and writer for Barstool Sports, Jerry Thornton. We'll get his take on not only the New England Patriots draft, which just occurred a couple of weeks ago, but his take on the free agents, the frenzy that the Patriots actually signed a bunch of free agents. We'll talk with him about that in just a few minutes. But again, it's hour number two, so stay tuned for that. Right now, time for us to step aside, and we're going to find out what's happening out on the roadways, being brought to you by Brennan Smoke Shop, online at brennansmokeshop.com. Locations, Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, New Bedford, and now Weymouth.
Southbound is slow from Furnace Brook to the split. Northbound's a 10-minute drive from Braintree to Boston. Route 3 South's body delays from the expressway to Union Street. 93 is good in either direction between Braintree and Canton. And Route 24 South, that's a 17-minute ride from 93 to 495. This report is sponsored by Compassion International. Join Compassion and give hope to a family in extreme poverty. Share your $40 one-time gift when you text the word GIVE to 83393. Traffic on the 9s every morning. I'm Lisa DeMilo in the WATD Traffic Center.
Hey, it's Jeff from Brennan Smoke Shop. I gotta give credit where credit is due. Al Gamache & Son, Michael Green Painting, and Foley Electric. Without these local contractors, Brennan Smoke Shop would be ugly. Every store we open, these guys get better and better at building them out. Take the new store in Hudson, New Hampshire, for instance. We put the display cases and the huge, absolutely enormous walk-in humidor on the same light switch. Thank you, Foley Electric. Justin Gamache, the and son, put a ramp in for the two-wheel dolly that carries the product from our local wholesaler, William Zoll and Son. Michael Green Painting. Oh my God, dude. They're like thing one, thing two, thing three, thing four, except they put paint on, not take it off. Come see their workmanship at our new store in Hudson, New Hampshire, June 2021. Brennan's Smoke Shop, the best smoke shop in Massachusetts and soon New Hampshire. Customers must be 21 years of age or older, and proper ID is required.
Follow Monday Night Talk on Twitter. Start at 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk. And don't forget to add hashtag Monday Night Talk to your tweets. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Thank you for keeping your radio dial set here to 959WATD. You are tuned into Monday Night Talk. First up, the State House Report. We do it every week, or at least we try to. We deviate. There's usually a good reason. Joining us for today's segment is State Senator Mike Brady. Senator, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing great. And how are you, Kevin?
I'm doing really good. You know, I want to get into the meat and potatoes of it, but let's make sure during our conversation, or at least before we close it out, we have a chance to talk a little bit about a guy that I know that was prevalent during our growing up in the city of Brockton, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, who passed away, and they're going to have a day for him. We'll talk about that, but that'll be at the close of our segment. I think I want to kind of really jump into, with your permission, the budget process. Here we go. It's moving down to the Senate. And I believe you have news as to the Senate budget as to when we're going to see that.
Yeah, we're taking it up, releasing it this week as we speak, and we'll be debating it in another week or so after that. So we have about a week to file amendments. I usually try to get similar amendments that I've put in the past in the budget, like to help people out with addictions and things for Plymouth County. Of course, the Mont Ponset water area to help clean up cryonic bacteria in there. That's an important thing in Silver Lake as well, because a lot of towns between Pembroke and Brockton get their water, including the city of Brockton. Sure. So we want to make sure that drinking water is clean and efficient, and the people that use the Mont Ponset pond for recreational use as well.
We should also make mention that even though the budget, the Senate version of the budget is being released this week, it's still going to be a little more than a week to 2 weeks before you actually will all get together to debate and add your own amendments.
That's correct. And, you know, last year was a very difficult year. And by the way, my hat goes out to a lot of people that we know who suffered with the COVID-19 pandemic. And then people that we lost. And, you know, my brother passed away a year ago, May 4th. And he was a great friend, and he was a selectman in Avon. And my hat goes out to all the accolades that people had sent. And, you know, as you know, Kevin, you've all with the Blue Knights and all that. And they had a great send off for him. And but a lot of other families have suffered. And, you know, our healthcare workers, our first line workers, the supermarket workers, my hat goes out to all of the first responders that day in and day in, they went to work during this pandemic. And, you know, a lot of them suffered through COVID. I had a cousin in Rockland who was a nurse at South Shore, and She ended up getting COVID, but now she's fully vaccinated and she's been back to work doing fine.
So what are we looking at? Do we have numbers yet? I know, I believe you're a member of the Senate Ways and Means. What are we looking at for numbers for the Senate budget? And is it similar to...
It starts off similar. The governor presents a budget, as you know, then it goes to the House of Representatives, and then it goes to the Senate. And the budget initially proposed by the governor is a certain figure. In last year, because of the pandemic, we ended up doing monthly budgets because we didn't know what was going to happen. And thank God for our federal legislators that helped with federal money. I know Plymouth County got a lot of that funding and helped distribute money to the towns that I represent in Plymouth County. But right now, for the month of April, which is very good news, we're up $385 million above projected earmarks funding coming into the Commonwealth for the month of April alone. So I think we're in good news to get more money to our districts. And I know a lot of cities and towns are suffering. If not for the federal money and the state money, they'd be hurting even worse. But I know, some of the school funding, for instance, we weren't able to fully fund the Student Opportunity Act last year. So we're going to do that this year. And we narrow it down to a 6-year plan rather than a 7-year plan. And we are looking to get increases in most of the communities that I represent, from Northeastern through Brockton all the way to Hanover down to Plimpton. And some towns are in tougher shapes than others. I know Whitman-Hanson suffers greatly, and they had a talk about if they don't do some overrides, they're looking at maybe laying off police officers. We can't afford to lay off police officers in any community. So we're hoping to get as much money as possible. And the federal money, which is going to help out tremendously. Now, with the state funding, they're in their third phase of that COVID relief, but the federal funding is going to be another blessing coming into the Commonwealth. And the big thing, as you know, Kevin, you and I have to balance our books. We cannot deficit spend. The state cannot deficit spend, but the federal government can. I am concerned about the federal deficit, but right now in this pandemic that we're still going through, we need that federal funding. That's going to help us out tremendously. So we're waiting to see the figures on that totally. We have some figures handy for that, but we're waiting to see some more. But the other big thing, we have to still get people vaccinated. We're trying to get back to a somewhat normal way of living. I know the restaurants really suffered. Small businesses suffered when they had to close last year. It was grant money given out to some of these businesses, up to $25,000. And then that money ended. We're hoping to get more money to help these small businesses all across the Commonwealth. And, some businesses stayed open and paid their helping employees, and others didn't, But the COVID vaccine thing, that's an important thing. I got my vaccination a week ago, my second vaccine. Luckily, I had no side effects, and I ended up getting COVID last November as well.
I would ask you this, and it's interesting that you bring up vaccinations. What's going on in regards to vaccination sites, especially locally?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because people like to go to the local facilities. I mean, I even have a tough time going to Foxborough on a normal day when there's not even a Patriots game going on. Never mind an elderly person that they're lucky if they take the car once a week to their supermarket. So we are opening up more vaccination sites and getting more vaccination supplies down to the South Shore. So, for instance, at the Shaw Center in Brockton, they're going to be taking in they were initially just doing Brockton residents or people that did work in Brockton. Now they're taking anybody who abuts Brockton. So Whitman, East Bridgewater, Hanson, all the Bridgewaters, Easton, Avon, Holbrook, anybody can go there and get vaccinated now. And I encourage people that had a tough time. And there was a website to go on. It stands for Brockton Neighborhood Health Center.org. It's BNHC.org. And again, if people have trouble getting on these websites, because as you know, I'm not a young man. I have trouble sometimes with websites. They can always call my office, and we're willing to help. That number is 617-722-1200, because we've helped a lot of people out that had tough time navigating the system. And I was able to call Sue Josh, and she's done a yeoman's work getting enough supplies. And I know, like, the towns, the Whitman Knights of Columbus were doing vaccines a while back. And then every other day, the administration in the corner office in Boston was changing their mind. So this is so important. We get the vaccines distributed locally.
You know, I want to kind of go back to the budget and talk about any amendments. You teased it earlier, some of your amendments. I think one of them dealing with addiction. I think you said another one in regards to Silver Lake. I don't know if you want to take a moment to talk a little bit more about those, or if there are other amendments that you have on the docket for the budget debate.
Well, we're still working on some of the amendments we filed before. You know, I got amendments in there for Hanover last year for their fire department. I got some other amendments. I'm meeting with a lot of different groups to see what their wishes are. As you know, the most important thing is why we have two ears and one mouth. We have to listen, and I'm meeting with different groups in my district or in the Commonwealth, or as well into the district in residence. Because, I mean, the addiction crisis is still going on. It's called a silent epidemic for an obvious reason. And especially now because of COVID, these people that go to the addiction sites have these regional meetings. They can't go in person anymore. Hopefully these sites will start open up like Gosnell or High Point or whatever. But meeting over a phone call doesn't work, as you know. So we need to help get more money for that. We've done an okay job. We're addressing that more. That's an important issue. But, you know, the issues like the Mont-Ponsett watershed area, the Silver Lake is important. Trying to get amendments. I've got amendments in the past for the town of Plimpton and Halifax as well. So I'm looking at all of that. Another thing that we're looking at is sports betting. And this is an important thing. You know, it's not an avenue to raise taxes. Revenue is coming up. As I mentioned, projected revenues are high. The revenues that came in is much higher than the initial projections. $385 million more during the month of April alone, which is great news. So hopefully we can distribute more money into these cities and towns. But sports betting is another big issue I'm in support of, and a lot of my constituents are supportive of it. We filed amendments in the budget last year. It didn't fly, so we're going to be taking it up in the Economic Development Committee, which I'm the vice chairmanship of, and we had meetings on this. There's about maybe six or seven bills filed to do with sports betting and a wide range of issues, whether you let the local businesses have sports betting, whether just the former racetracks have them or the casinos. I would like to see the local businesses that already have lottery, like Keno, they should have a piece of the pie, especially when they've suffered during this time. But this is all being worked out with the leadership. And whether we take it up in a budget amendment this week or we have a separate hearing, which we're going to have hearings on anyway, on sports betting. But I'll tell you, a lot of my constituents are waiting for this. Other states around us have it. The revenue that these states are getting in is amazing. And it creates jobs as well. So I think it's a win-win. Everybody's already doing it anyway. And it's a choice. So if you don't want to do sports betting, you don't have to. If you do want to, you can.
Yeah, and if you're just tuning into our program, I was speaking with State Senator Mike Brady. Just a quick note. I'm going to ask you as a sports fan, Senator, over under number of games before Mac Jones becomes starting quarterback. We'll start it at, we'll say, 8 games. Over under.
That's a tough call. I say he's ready to go. I mean, what a great year he's had the past year in college. And I think it's a great choice for the Patriots. We have a lot of fans of him in the school he went to. I mean, one of the local places in Brockton, they're huge Alabama fans. They have a helmet of Alabama. Every time there's an Alabama, they bring it out. So I think it's going to be great news for the Patriots. I think it's a great move.
So if we can kind of move along here in our conversation, I've tried to do this with folks that I talk to when I'm talking to senators or representatives, and I want to ask you as to committees, do you have any committee assignments that you want to share with us or give any updates?
Well, I'm back being the chairman of the Public Service Committee. So we've got a lot of bills coming before that committee. We're doing some home rule petitions as we speak to get those out of the way. Then we're going to have hearings on the rest. As I mentioned, I'm the vice chairman of Economic Development. I'm also I'm a member of the Veterans Committee on Veterans Affairs, and we are in the process of funding to build a new Holyoke Soldier Home. And we heard the tragedies happened there. That building was outdated. So the initial proposal was $400 million to build a new facility, but the Senate put in an additional $200 million to look at veterans services in other parts of the Commonwealth, because not everybody wants to have their family members live at the soldiers' home, and it's not easy for people down here to visit up there. So that's an important endeavor. We did a project labor agreement, and we'll see what happens. It's going through the conference committee as we speak, but I'm hoping to get that fully funded. You know, our veterans, as we all know, put their life on the line. We wouldn't have the open discussion that we can have today and open debates as we do as we're in session if not for the veterans fought and died for our country. And you know, I've been involved with a lot of the VFWs across the Commonwealth. You know, the Brockton one, I've been to the Whitman one, some of the other ones. And we've got to support our veterans. And by the way, the VA hospital in Brockton has gone out beyond just their facility. They've gone to Whitman, to the VFW. They've gone to some churches. They are helping our veterans get vaccinated as we speak.
Last topic that I have on my list here to talk to you about is a special day that's being planned in the City of Champions. It's known as City of Champions. The two cornerstones, other than Brockton Boxer football and all the championships they won under Armand Colombo, is also, and Peter Colombo, don't want to forget Peter, is boxing. Rocky Marciano and Marvelous Marvin Hagler. The Marvelous one passed away recently. I believe that the governor named May 23rd Marvelous Marvin Hagler Day. Give me your thoughts, recollections on the champion, best, probably the greatest middleweight champion that we've known, at least in our lifetime, and this day.
Well, as you know, you and I, Kevin, grew up in this era in one of the best fights that I've ever seen. I was at Massaray Community College on one of the big screens with the Hagler-Hearns fight. I remember he had the banner war on his forehead, and it was probably the best three-rounder I ever saw in my life. But we grew up in that era. You know, we were young when Rocky died. That was in 1969. We have a statue in his honor up at the Marciano Stadium. But we're honoring Marvin Hagler on his birthday, May 23rd. He recently passed away, and I've met with his mother, and there's a committee formed to plan the event on his honor. And Mrs. Hagler is a sweetheart. She still lives in Ward 2 in the district. And there's a lot of guests coming. A lot of people in the boxing industry will be there. It's May 23rd. It's going to be from 1 p.m. Gates open, 2 p.m. the event starts. It's open to the public right at Marciano Stadium in Brockton off of Forest Avenue. And there'll be a lot of guest speakers. I ended one of our sessions in the Senate like we do when people pass away in honor of Marvin. I know the House members did the same thing. But this is a pretty nice event, and it's more to honor his family, too, because, as I mentioned, his mothers and his sisters and Robbie Sims, who is also a boxer, he's going to be there. And Tony Petronelli is going to be there. But there'll be other famous boxers showing up, and there might be some surprise boxers. I don't think the guy who supposedly was designated the winner out in Vegas will show up. That's still a controversial fight, as we know. But there'll be other boxers that respected Marvin, and they might have lost against him, but they're going to show up. And I think that promoter there with the wild hairdo might even be showing up, Don King or whatever, but because he was at the Marciano statue unveilment. And so it's a event to honor him, May 23rd from 2 p.m. The gates open at 1 p.m., and it is open to the public, and it's free to the public.
Yeah, it's going to be fantastic. I think some of the information that I saw was you could see Bernard Hopkins, who is a middleweight champion himself. Stephen A. Smith, folks know him from ESPN fame. Boxing writer, I think, who's written for local Boston newspapers. Ron Borges, just to name a few, are on that particular guest list. As we wrap things up, and close out our conversation here, anything you want to say to your constituents who might want to reach out to you, or anything you just want to say in closing?
Well, thank you, Kevin. I'd just like to thank all my constituents for the continued support and keep it in contact with me. And another issue we had is unemployment issues that during the COVID pandemic, it's very difficult. So my office is available to help anybody out. The number is 617-722-1200. Any ideas you think we should be doing? Because we work for the people, we represent the people, and not only in the district, but across the Commonwealth as well, because we passed statewide legislation. And again, this is Nurses Month too, and I want to honor all the nurses out there because, as I mentioned earlier, they were the frontline workers. And, you know, the other day was National Nurses Day. This is National Nurses Month as we speak. So I want to thank all our healthcare workers and especially the nurses who have been there through thick and thin through this pandemic.
Senator, I want to thank you, as always, for taking time out of your busy schedule to talk to the folks and have a conversation here for all to be able to glean information from.
Thank you, Kevin. And I look forward to coming back on again, probably after we get through the budget. As you know, the funding is one of the most important things to deliver the funding to the cities and towns that we all represent.
That'll do it for this segment, the State House Report. We will step aside just for a couple of moments. And when we come back, more Monday Night Talk right here on 95.9 WATD.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
At South Shore Bank, helping you reach your financial goals is the priority. But helping you strengthen your community is our passion. Service is a commitment, but support is a calling. Success is the name of the game, but sharing success is the only way we win. As a mutual bank, we make sure that what's good for you serves the greater good. Because here, profits are reinvested in our communities. Success, the feeling's mutual. Visit us today at southshorebank.com. Member FDIC, member DIF, equal housing lender.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome opening day. Pembroke Titans softball.
Okay, Addie, you got this. Just relax.
I know, Dad.
First batter coming to the plate.
I know, Hattie, but just keep your eye on the ball. Just keep your eye on the ball.
Dad, relax. I do got this.
I know, Hattie. Remember, don't swing at the first pitch.
Daddy!
And here's the pitch. That is a fair... In fact, that's a home run!
Sorry about your windshield, Dad.
Are you kidding me? That was awesome. I'm keeping the inspection sticker for a souvenir.
Windshield broken by a home run? Call Tiny first. 1-888-64-TINYS.
That's my Hattie.
Be a part of the show. Call in and join in on the conversation. 781-837-4900. Now, back to Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Hey, welcome back to Monday Night Talk here at 95.9 WATD. And we have a special guest who is joining us on this program. He is a Duxbury resident. He's actually a high school student. He's actually graduating. He's a senior at Duxbury High School. And here we're here to talk a little bit about something really special that he did. He actually had a featured video on the TEDx Talk channel. Now, this is, from what I'm told, they got 30 million subscribers. And he actually did this very special video. And he's going to talk to us a little bit about it. We'll get to know him first, and then we'll kind of get an idea as to the video. And then you at home, your mission is to tell some folks right now, this particular video. Now, I put a video up. I'm lucky if I get 20 viewers. He has a video right now that is just past 6,000 views. I want to get him to 10,000 or 20,000, but hear the story first. We are going to introduce to you Joe Nijame. He is my guest. Joe, welcome to Monday Night Talk, sir.
Thank you for having me. That was a very, very gracious introduction.
Well, tell us a little bit about yourself, first and foremost. My understanding, you're getting ready to graduate. You already got a destination for college. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, so I've been a Duxbury resident for pretty much all my life. I'm about to be a graduate. It's hard to believe, and it couldn't come soon enough in this crazy world we live in. And I'm also off to college. I'm going to Washington University in St. Louis, and I'm super excited to be there. But a little bit about myself. I play two sports. I play baseball and I wrestle, primarily wrestling. Wrestling has taught me so many lessons, and I'm so fortunate to be a part of that team in Duxbury. And this kind of project, it was a culmination of a lot of different things, but I'm so glad that I could share it with the world.
Now, the particular topic that you actually, you got in front of some cameras and you talked about the topic, my understanding was confidence and humility.
Yeah. So it's kind of the interplay between the two of those. I kind of was fed up with a lot of the, or at least I, quite some time ago, and although it doesn't seem like it, I kind of derived my confidence from sources outside of my control. And so it hurt me a lot. And I kind of was under all the pressures of social media and such a fast paced world. I really don't believe that we're meant to be in front of so many people at any given moment. And so I was kind of fed up with that. And I stumbled upon building my confidence from humility. And it's kind of an interesting topic. And the video that is featured, it's a TEDx talk. It's a pretty awesome platform. It kind of explores the details of where we get our confidence and how we can kind of shift our confidence, the derivation of our confidence from external sources like Instagram likes, compliments, even grades, how we can shift that to more internally based. And that allows us to have more control over our confidence, and it makes it so that we're not one day super confident and then the next in the gutter.
Almost kind of like riding a roller coaster from, exactly. You know, one batch of likes or follows to the next. I like it. I like it. Now, what inspired you to create this, and where did you go to create this particular video?
So the video itself, there's kind of a long story. It obviously was not as simple as I thought it would be. A lot due to this crazy year. The pandemic canceled a lot of these TED events, and it was originally supposed to be in front of a live audience. However, I wasn't able to do that. But kind of where I got the inspiration from it, again, I was kind of fed up with this, and it comes from a lot of personal struggles, and there's probably a million and one reasons why I did it. But it all kind of came down to, I really had this message of deriving our confidence from internal sources. And I was super passionate about it. And it just so happened that a TED talk served the delivery method the best. And so I applied, and I kind of went through the process of getting into an event, and I was lucky enough to be accepted, and I worked with a bunch of different people from all over the world to craft the speech, and I'm very fortunate that I found them. But I ultimately went to, and this is kind of a plug for PAC TV in Plymouth. They were fantastic. They kind of helped me with the video production. I didn't think when I got into this that I would be learning about camera angles and microphone placement, but that ended up being the hardest part of it. I thought it would be writing the speech itself, but big thanks to all of them at PAC TV.
Yeah, they do a fantastic job down there, led by their executive director, Julie Thompson. The title, correct me if I'm wrong, the title of your video is called Do Something Amazing and Tell No One.
Yes, that is my title. That became the kind of motto of the entire talk. It kind of centers around this idea that when we do really big things, our first instinct is to go tell everyone, to kind of gain that validation that everyone can give us of oh, look, I just climbed this mountain, or oh, look, I'm doing amazing things. And so I loved that do something amazing kind of phrase, but I felt it was a little empty. And so I can actually tell the story about how I kind of came to that realization. Okay. For anyone who knows me, I'm super into rock climbing. And so I used to go to the rock gym a lot with my friends. And I went with one particular friend who was kind of my partner. And there was this one route that we could never get. We would throw ourselves at this wall and we could never get up it. And it became kind of an inside joke between the two of us. But one day, I was apparently feeling pretty good, and I was able to do it. And I got to the top, and of course my hands were slipping, and I was super tired. And I kind of looked back to see if my friend was watching, and he was turned away. And by the time that I looked back, I fell. And so I kind of was forced into him not seeing my achievement. And I knew that he probably wouldn't believe me if I said that I did it, because we had done it probably 100 times before and never gotten it. And so oddly that feeling of kind of keeping that accomplishment to myself was somewhat more gratifying than that kind of fleeting compliment he would pay, or the fleeting admiration he would give to me for completing that. And I kind of ran with that, feeling of kind of like internal gratification of saying like, oh my God, I proved myself wrong instead of other people wrong. And so that became the message that I really wanted to spread, and TED became the place to spread it.
If you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Joe Nijame, and we're talking about a video that he put together. This is, again, this Duxbury High School senior, and he had a message that he wanted to share. Following up on what you had just mentioned, do you feel the art of being humble is growing lost these days, especially amongst, I don't think it's a generational thing. I think that a lot of people aren't as humble as they should be. Am I wrong?
Well, I do think it it is in short supply, but I don't think that's anyone's fault, first of all. I think there's a lot of new things like social media that have only been around for 10, 15 years that make it really hard not to brag. It makes it even like now, I would say this talk is an accomplishment of mine. And sadly, I have to show it off to get my message across. And so there's kind of a paradox there. And so kind of no one's perfect about this, but we can all kind of strive to be. And so I would say kind of social media, it rewards not being humble, and it rewards the impulsivity of sending off a tweet that might polarize people or that you might not say in person. And so that kind of reward is what keeps people from being humble. And I almost would say it's not from being humble, but it's from keeping accomplishments to themselves. It's so easy to send it off, but it's so hard to keep it for yourself. And at the end of the day, I think the things that you keep to yourself are the things that are going to last longer than the posts on Instagram or the Twitter tweet you sent out.
I would ask you this. I watched a good majority of your video, and I must say that the one thing that struck me was your poise, your delivery. Was this something that, you know, you practiced and that you put a lot of thought into, or was it you walked in, you put your lav mic on, and you one-taked it? What happened? How did talk to me about your poise and how you did this?
Thank you, first of all. That is really kind of you. I wish I could say I was a natural, but there was a lot of practice. There was a bit of memorization and kind of learning tone. And I kind of had a good group around me that would help me kind of figure it out as I went along. One of the main things I did was whenever I kind of reached a roadblock, because I was between events, my first event got canceled and I had to reapply and then got accepted to that one. Because I was between events, I had no one kind of constant, no speaking coach constant throughout the entire process. And so I had to go sort of find my own. I found, it's odd to say, but I found one in Germany. He was a rhetoric coach, and I'm so grateful to find him. But I was up pretty early in the morning because of the time difference to talk to him. And he kind of gave me some tips, and he helped me kind of phrase everything correctly and gave me just a few pointers on how to be a little bit more poised.
Now, talk to me about the audience. Are you targeting a particular audience? Is this something that you're hoping that you could spread across your peers or your generation? Or are you hoping that this is something that'll transcend many generations, this particular video?
Well, I definitely had people like myself in mind. And so teens, I went through all these things a little bit earlier in my high school career, probably sophomore year. So I was about 15, 16, when I was dealing with all this. So it's definitely, if I could help the people that were just like me, I would call it a success. But I also think it has applications to parents, and parents oftentimes don't ask these questions about what their kids are thinking, or what their kids are dealing with. It's hard to relate to something you don't know is happening. And so if I could serve as even just a starter of conversations, I would think it's successful.
As I teased at the beginning of our conversation here, that you've got a lot, you've got a viewership. You know, you're up to 6,000. Did you expect it to take off? I mean, again, you're on a platform that has high visibility. What was it like to get to your first 1,000 or your second 1,000, and knowing that the totals are continue to grow, they're going to continue to grow?
It's very funny. When I actually realized, because so there's an approval process. So each event sends in the videos that they aired live, and then about 3 or 4 days later, Ted approves them and puts them up on their YouTube channel, and I think their website. But I apparently did not pay enough attention, and so I was a day late in when I realized my talk was up, and so I frantically tried to kind of promote, do the last second promotions, and then let it grow from on its own. But I was super grateful for the response. I promised myself beforehand that I would try to remain ambivalent to the response. In keeping with the theme of my talk, I didn't want to do this for the compliments or for the views or the likes. I wanted to do this for myself. And ultimately, I'm very proud of myself for getting that message out there. And if 6,000 people view it or 10,000, I think it's already a success.
If folks wanted to see this video, do you have a quick way? Again, it's not a visual medium, so you can't just go,
yeah.
Hey, look at this link. What's the easiest way for folks to find your video?
So the easiest way would be to go to YouTube and type into the search bar Joe Nejame, Joenejame. And hopefully my talk will appear at the top. It's a blue background and it's me. You don't know what I look like though.
So I would probably, one of my final questions is what do you feel that you gained out of this experience? And how do you feel that it's going to help you down the road?
Well, first of all, I think I gained a lot in learning kind of how, honestly, it made me more grateful. I probably reached out to 4 or 5 different random people, rhetoric coaches, people who have given talks in the past. And I reached out through LinkedIn, and it made me so grateful because no one at any point said, no, like we can't talk or no, we can't go on a quick Zoom. And I learned so much from everyone else. And I think that is something that I'm going to take with me and know that I can reach out to people. I also think just purely practical, I learned how to speak a little bit better. I think everyone should go through the experience of public speaking because, it can be petrifying and it can be exhilarating. But I think in the end, you're going to be better off than you started.
And if I may ask, what are you going to Washington University for? What's your major?
So I want to double major in business administration and more specifically strategic management. And then I also want to major in international affairs.
Oh, I was kind of thinking that maybe you might have a little slight minor in communications.
Yeah, in English or communications or one of those. Yeah, I certainly will take classes. That's one thing. I have very eclectic tastes, and so I will be taking a bunch of different classes.
If you have one final thing to say to the audience here on 95.9 WATD, what would you like to say in closing?
I think I'd like to reiterate the theme of my talk, the do something amazing and tell nobody. I think more people should just go out and do amazing things, and that they should do things that probably won't work. And then they should try to keep them to themselves and keep those accomplishments instead of making it about what other people think of them. Make it about what you think about them yourself.
Joe, thank you so much for your time and sharing your story.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so grateful.
You got it. There he is, Joe Nejame. He is a Duxbury High School senior, and he's well on his way to a successful career. And if you have a chance, please check out his video, Do Something Amazing and Tell Nobody. You can find it on the TEDx Talk channel. Please look for it, like it, share it. We're going to step aside. That's going to conclude the first hour of Monday Night Talk. When we come back, hour number two. You are tuned into Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. Stay tuned.
Hey, it's Jeff from Brennan Smoke Shop. I gotta give credit where credit is due. Al Gamash & Son, Michael Green Painting, and Foley Electric. Without these local contractors, Brennan Smoke Shop would be ugly. Every store we open, these guys get better and better at building them out. Take the new store in Hudson, New Hampshire, for instance. We put the display cases and the huge, absolutely enormous walk-in humidor on the same light switch. Thank you, Foley Electric. Justin Gamash, the and son, put a ramp in for the two-wheel dolly that carries the product from our local wholesaler, William Zoll & Son. Michael Green Painting. Oh my God, dude. They're like thing one, thing two, thing three, thing four, except they put paint on, not take it off. Come see their workmanship at our new store in Hudson, New Hampshire, June 2021. Brennan's Smoke Shop, the best smoke shop in Massachusetts and soon New Hampshire. Customers must be 21 years of age or older, and proper ID is required.
Dad, you think UFOs will ever come?
Well, I'm not sure they've ever been invited.
Can we invite them?
Yeah, but how?
Well, we've got a flat roof and Christmas light strings. We can spell out UFOs land here.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll hold the ladder for you.
Later that night, there arose such a clatter.
Dad, look out on the lawn! A UFO with a broken windshield!
Wow, better call Tiny and Sons. They'll replace that windshield and insurance pays.
Do space aliens have insurance?
Oh, they wouldn't leave home without it.
I'm Peter Brown from Tiny and Sons Auto Glass in Pembroke. Our service is out of this world. Just call 1-888-64-TINYS. And thank you.
WATD FM Marshfield, WBMS Brockton. This is the South Shore's radio station, 95.9 FM WATD. Streaming online at 95.9WATD.com. And with your smart speaker, just by saying play WATD. Monday Night Talk continues all week long. Go to 95.9WATD.com/Monday Night Talk and keep in touch on Facebook and Twitter. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
So we're just a couple of weeks out since the Derek Chauvin, the verdict. And if you don't recognize that name, I feel that the world was watching the state of Minnesota. If anybody knows the name George Floyd or does not know the name George Floyd, this is an individual who lost his life because he had a police officer who was kneeling on his neck as the individual was saying that I cannot breathe. It was a verdict that was handed down just a couple of weeks ago. Joining us for this conversation is none other than the award-winning documentarian Newby Rateau. I call him Newbertson because he's my friend. But Newby and I have had many of these conversations, and it's great to have you back on, Newby, to kind of to talk about the verdict and moving forward. How are you? Just first and foremost, just a well-being check. How are you?
I'm doing well. You know, doing well. Doing teaching the students film, and you know, happy to have them back. Is slowly but surely into the classroom. So I'm doing well. Hope you're doing well yourself, Kevin.
I'm good. Let's not forget also, you are in the middle of yet another potentially award-winning piece, I Am You, which I believe deals with immigration. Am I correct?
Yeah, we touch on issues that are not controversial, you know, very light issues.
He says with a small chuckle. What, just so folks know, am I right? What, give me a little bit of backstory on IMU.
So IMU is a documentary on immigration, and we're going to, like we do all of our documentaries, get all perspectives. We're going to get perspectives from four different sides of immigration. We'll get perspectives of a dreamer. We'll get perspective of an angel mom, which is a term that Donald Trump used for, former President Donald Trump used for mothers or mothers who've lost sons or daughters due to undocumented immigrants. We're going to talk to African-Americans, and we're going to talk to second-generation immigration, third-generation, you know, like us, you know, who had parents or grandparents born in other countries, and, you know, we're natural-born citizens. So from those four perspectives, how about people see immigration? And we're going to tell those four stories. And then at the end of the document, like we do for everyone, you guys make the decision on where we need to go next. Our job is to tell a story, not pick a side, but tell it in an entertaining way, which we will, tell it in an engaging way, which we will. And it's going to get emotional. It's going to be uncomfortable. But this is by far our most difficult documentary we've done because, you know, there's no playbook of how to do a documentary during a pandemic. So I tell us back. But it's also been a blessing. I've been able to really talk to a few different people. We just got confirmation that we're going to have DA Rachel Rollins on the documentary as well. So excited about that. You know, he had one of the some conservative leaders in New York City that are going to be the documentary. We have some local people right around in the Brockton area. So we're excited. You know, we're excited. We're going to tell some really good stories, and I'm really blessed that people are willing to trust us to tell this story. I'm humbled every day, Kevin, by the amount of support we get, and I don't want to let them down.
I might add that that fourth generational immigrants like myself, well, or children of fourth generational children like myself, did not make the cut because the cut was third generation, as my family actually migrated here from Italy back in, you know, 1910, 1912, when they actually cruised in Ellis Island, and you had to have that special certificate. So when you do end up expanding and doing part two, you know, and do, you know, you really go down and the roots are a little deeper into the soil, I look forward to the older immigrants and their story.
Absolutely. Yeah, but it's all the same thing, though. It's trying to connect between the old country, yep, and also trying to assimilate in America. And that's a struggle that many people go through. It's trying to do that fine line of keeping the culture, but also assimilating here to the new country, the American culture.
Yeah, and you're right. It's somebody. It doesn't matter what layer it is, whether it's the second layer, the third layer, the tenth layer. The stories are similar as to, you know, coming from your point of origin and coming to a new place. You want to kind of be able to assimilate, but yet you also want to feel that comfort of home. Right. You know what I mean?
And then one part of the documentary I'm really curious about. I never thought it'd be. It might be more of a bigger one that I thought is the African-American perspective, because the African-Americans don't truly have a home, you know, coming, you know, through slavery, but also maybe not truly feeling welcome in this country. So it's a different perspective of how they feel about immigration. So that's going to be an interesting part of the documentary. So all of it, the dreamer perspective, the angel mothers who unfortunately lost their sons and daughters. I mean, it's a perspective where we're going to show empathy for all the sides and have the audience make the decision.
So our conversation here today is to talk about the Derek Chauvin verdict. Where were you? This is like a time in history where you're like, where were you? What were you expecting? And did it meet your expectations? Was it underwhelming? Give me your thought as somebody who I know was kind of watching to see what the jury had to say.
And I was really nervous. In my heart, in my heart and logically, I thought that Derek Chauvin was going to get some time in prison, and we'll find out when they release the sentencing of how long. I think it should be a very stiff sentence. If it's not, there's going to be some craziness going on in the streets. But to be quite frank with you, Kevin, I was really nervous I was nervous, and after the verdict, what I did was I called the mothers who were in my documentary from past cases, Oscar Grant's mother. I shot them a text. I shot them a text, Wanda Johnson, which is Oscar Grant's mother, Greta Willis, which is Kevin Cooper's mother, the case in Baltimore, and Mrs. Diallo, which is the mother of Amadou Diallo, the case in New York, where the African immigrant was shot 41 times. And I was just thinking about them. And finally, you know, obviously justice wasn't done for their sons, how they feel. But I was really thinking about them because, you know, when I finish this police documentary, when we finish it, everyone thinks it's over. All right, it's over. Happy ending. Let's move on. But this is life. And I carry those kids' names with me all the time, all the time. I talk to the mothers at least once every couple of months. So it was a sense of a little closure, maybe a little bit, or a little small first step to where we need to go in terms of justice for many young Black men and girls who didn't get justice. So it was emotional. It was a very emotional feeling. And again, it wasn't about George Floyd. I didn't know him. You didn't know him. But it was about what George Floyd represented. I think that's what a lot of people need to understand. You know, they're going to bring up some other things about him, which are true, but it's what he represented. And I'll like to talk about that a little later, too.
You know, leading up to it, if you watched any of the news coverage, depending what the particular outlet was, you know, there were folks who were kind of, they were making their way around the courthouse. I believe that there was one particular piece of coverage where there was an individual who was actually painting. He was painting the scene. And the reporter asked him. He goes, "Well, what are you painting here? What do you expect?" He goes, "Well, this could come. This could be heaven, or this could be hell, and it depends on what is announced for the, I believe, the second degree and third degree charges. That this could be a thing of beauty, or this could be chaos." And I found that a very profound statement. You know, did you, as you were watching it, and having any conversations, have similar conversations with folks as to this could be a step forward or this could be more of the same?
I think it's a step forward. And I want to compare it. I want to compare the how people felt. I don't want to compare the case, but the feeling. 1994 O.J. Simpson. Okay. I'm not comparing the case. I'm comparing the feeling. The feeling was that a lot of people in the jury admitted it, that it was payback for Rodney King. It was payback for Rodney King and so many of the times where they felt like it was a lot of injustices. And they wanted to prove a point that, you know, rich white people are winning cases all the time over poor Black people. And this was a reverse, where it was a rich Black man. And I'm not saying it was right, but it was payback. And that feeling was very similar for George Floyd. Obviously, I was a lot younger, but, you know, just in researching those two cases, the feeling now, I was like, all right, this is payback. It wasn't just about George Floyd. It was about Amadou Diallo. It was about V.J. Henry. It was about Oscar Grant. It was about Alton Sterling, okay? It was about Muhammad Ba. So it that's the feeling that it felt. I do think it's a step forward. I think people now are understanding that there's an issue. And it's not just Black people. I think, you know, whenever I think about major social justice movements happening, it's never just Black people. It becomes a people issue. You know, the civil rights movement was a people issue. You had good white people march with Martin Luther King. You know, over here, you had a lot of white people, some cases majority white people, marching for the justice of George Floyd. And I think once it becomes a people issue, not just a race issue, I think things move forward. The reason why Kaepernick kneeling maybe wasn't as popular, and look at how small the protest and then how I think he was right. But the reason why people were going for it is because I mean, a lot of those white people kneeling with him. It was just mostly Black people, you know? So I think that's why the movement initially didn't help. But now, you know, definitely move the needle. But it's worked.
So I would ask you this, and it's kind of a two-part question. So I'll ask the first part. You use the term, did you say a payback? Would you say that using I heard leaders, I heard folks who were who've been observing and who were analysts call it a makeup call. Are the two words synonymous, or is there a difference between the two?
No, I mean, I think we're, you know, that's definitely on the same page of what I'm saying. But, you know, we could say makeup call payback. The fact of the matter is, I think the verdict was correct. Whether it was payback or not, that's the feeling people had. But when you look at the case itself, you know, you got, you know, numb nuts like Candace Owens that talks about how, you know, George Floyd had, you know, all these drugs in his body. True. George Floyd was a criminal. True. George Floyd was this, that, and the other. True. But the fact of the matter is the neck on the knee accelerated the death. So, you know, we could talk about stuff about George Floyd, and that's what they do. They, you know, a lot of times the media will criticize the victim in the case. But Derek Chauvin had multiple complaints, okay? 18 complaints against him, okay? Now, I talked to Commissioner Gross at 3, and they stopped. What the hell is going on? Not saying Boston's perfect, but there's something going on in Minnesota. They got to get their act together over there. There's something going on. This is a bunch of times that's happening. So,
let's not forget that prior, I want to say a few days prior to this verdict, that there was an incident where another individual was accidentally killed. And some folks will debate whether it was accidentally, because instead of grabbing a stun gun or a taser, the officer in question grabbed her service weapon and fired it at the individual.
And Kevin, if you're pro police, and I think it's funny, you can't be pro police and pro social justice, it seems like, which you could. Okay. And that's everything in this country right now. Is so black and white, you're Republican, Democrat, liberal, conservative, pro police. It's like, no, that's not how people are. We're not robots. Okay. Mm-hmm. I always say I'm liberal, but I'm not an idiot. You know, I mean, there's certain things I'm liberal about and certain things I'm conservative about. For the most part, I lean more liberal, but I'm also a realist. The fact of the matter is that if you're pro-police and you're pro making the community safer, I think we should really make it a decision to have more weapons that are non-lethal. I mean, that seems like a logical step of, listen, an officer is obviously scared. They don't know what he or she has. Why don't we give them more options and help them? Okay, because they're people just like us. They put their pants on one leg at a time. Okay, why don't we give them more options? There's a taser, which was cool, but sometimes a taser is inaccurate. I'm trying to understand. The gun is the most powerful and the most accurate. But you tell me in this country right now, a lot of smart people we have, we can't think of more non-lethal weapons that are just as effective? You tell me Massachusetts right now, there's not a statewide body camera program? That's borderline criminal as far as I'm concerned. That every single police officer does not have a body camera. That's a problem. And here's the, let's get to the root of the problem. Okay? And people are gonna be really pissed at me. I think unions are the problem. I think unions are the problem in a lot of places, okay, to be quite frank with you. I think a union's job originally was to, you know, help the workplace make it more environment, make it more friendly, make it safe, and they've done their job. The unions have done their job. Little kids are not working 60 hours and all this. They've done their job. Now, it seems like their job now is to protect bad police officers. And when you talk to different chiefs and everything, we want to do this, but the union. And to be quite frank, you can go to a lot of professions and say that. Okay? We want to do this, but the union says this. And I'm telling you this right now. We're talking about all these black, you know, these case of black and brown people being shot and killed. But I'm willing to bet if the unions get the hell out the way and we're a little more progressive and let the chiefs do their job, I'm pretty sure a lot of this stuff wouldn't be as bad as it is now. The unions need to get the hell out the way. And first and foremost, let body cameras be on every single police officer and allow some more non-lethal options.
I think you don't know it, but I think you may have found a possible project for you in the future after you're done with IMU.
Possibly. I mean, listen, I'm a union guy. I'm in a teachers union, you know, so, you know, I'm in a union myself, but I firmly believe that a lot of times they protect bad employees. rather than really have progressive things for the benefit. The police union is to benefit the people, not the police officers, but the people. Let me track back. And the police officers. But I'm saying these things that are progressive will help out both parties.
You are just tuning in. We're speaking with award-winning documentarian Nubi Ritto, and we're talking about the Derek Chauvin verdict and what comes next. I think I have to ask you this, Nubi, and I have to ask this as a rhetorical question. But do you feel as though the outcome, do you feel that the weight of the verdict was on the shoulders of the jury, that they had to come out with a guilty verdict for fear of that there would be a mass set of protests?
Yes.
And people would be that, and I would ask, and so that, and then the follow up question would be, is that fair? Was justice really done? And under the true word of justice, not justice for a particular a series of events that are going, but true justice. Did they actually make the right call because he was guilty, or they did it for the fear that there was going to be some kind of public outcry that would have led to many protests and a lot of unrest?
The answer to all your questions is yes, yes, and yes, sir, and yesest. Okay? And what's wrong with that? What's wrong with a little pressure? Pressure is good in sports. I love pressure. Pressure makes you perform better. A little pressure on the jury doesn't hurt. A little pressure on the lawyers doesn't hurt. Makes you perform, makes you sharper. I love pressure. Bring it. Yeah. It needs to be, and do whatever it took to get a guilty verdict legally, in which they did. It was the right. I can understand if it was innocent, and the majority of people didn't felt that way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but it was the right call. It was the right call. The jury did their job. Okay, the majority of people thought he was guilty, and he was guilty. Now, the majority of people thought he was innocent, he was guilty, then you could cause some uproar. But the pressure made them do their job better. I mean, there was a point when I was watching the trial. You know, I thought the people who were defending Derek Chauvin were really on the case of the other side. You know, they got some damn good people, okay, on the prosecutor side. I mean, they got former chiefs, analysts. I mean, they were ready, locked, and loaded. I mean, I thought, you know, Derek Chauvin, I thought his defense was terrible, to be quite frank with you. His lawyer was abominable, really. You know, so you talk about the pressure and everything, but since when's pressure bad? You know, we have a lot of these words now, Kevin. I don't want to get off topic. A lot of words that are negative now. Like, you know, people talk about white privilege or privilege in general. That's a bad word. Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with a little privilege. We want to be privileged. How's that negative? Kevin, I'm privileged. I'm black, but I'm privileged. I grew up in a house with two parents. Listen, we weren't rich by any means. Okay? But, you know, I grew up middle class. We're privileged. Ain't nothing wrong with that.
But you're talking about that you're not rich. Well, maybe you're not rich in the financial sense, but I'm sure you're rich in so many other areas.
Right. But what I'm saying is, saying the word privilege is negative. It's only negative if you don't acknowledge it and don't try to help people out to get you to where you're at. I'm privileged. I acknowledge it. And now my whole mission in life is to bring people up to where I'm at and higher. If you don't acknowledge it and don't know it's not privilege, then that's the issue. Then that's the issue. You know. So I mean, we're getting off topic, but you know,
But again, it's like one of the outer rings. You know what I mean? It's part of the conversation. You know, I think earlier you had mentioned it. You know, I mean, a part of the problem I feel sometimes with the justice system isn't necessarily where it's not, there's not a fairness depending on your median income as far as your skin color, but also your median income, what you're able to generate. And if you're somebody who, you know, you live paycheck to paycheck and you're working three jobs, maybe the system's not going to be just as fair to you as somebody who pulls in a six-figure salary and is well known within the community. You know, that folks feel that individuals who have the money, who have the influence, are more likely to get the lesser sentences than the individual who works around the clock to be able to put a roof over their head and take care of their family. Am I wrong?
And that's what you call, and this is where everyone gets all like nervous. That's what you call systematic racism. I don't think, listen, there's individuals who are racist. I think that's a small number. There's always going to be bad people in the world, in the country.
Right.
But that's systematic racism. And that's what needs to be solved. And the second you say that to people, they get all offended and all butthurt. Right. And no, listen, this is a problem that we got to fix. We got some systematic racism in this country.
Right.
We got to acknowledge it and we got to fix it. Kevin, healthcare systematically racist. Let me just give you a real time example, something real. Okay. Look at City of Lynn, Brockton, what have you. How many Whole Foods do you see there? How many Whole Foods do you see there?
Probably none.
How many liquor stores and fast food restaurants do you see there? And look at the diabetes rate and heart disease rate. And look who lives longer. You go to the next town over in Denham, there's a Whole Foods. Why is healthy food more expensive than unhealthy food? And who can afford it? Who lives longer? That's systematic racism. Let's acknowledge it. I'm not saying, Kevin, you're racist. I'm racist. But there's a system that needs to be changed. And you talk to a conservative and they freak out. Stop freaking out. Let's fix it.
One of my final questions as we get ready to wrap up our conversation here is, there has been an appeal filed for the Chauvin verdict. Do you feel that this is going to be something that America will still be watching? Or is this something that's just going to be an undercurrent?
Well, I mean, I think it's going to take a couple of years for a new trial. You know, so I think just naturally people may forget about it. That's just the reality of the situation. But I just don't, I mean, could he maybe get a lesser sentence? Yes, but he's going to do some time in jail. Mm. I mean, the fact of the matter is that his neck on the knee accelerated the death. Now, listen, there's going to be arguments about maybe some media influence on the jury. Listen, you got to be someone, you know, buried in a hole to not notice the media influence and the pressure.
Sure.
Yeah, you know, you could admit that and maybe could have affected the case, maybe swayed it one way or another slightly. Yes, but I don't think it would have overturned someone's decision on what to make for a verdict. I don't think they can prove that without a reasonable doubt. Who knows? I'm not a lawyer. I don't think they can prove that. But people will forget about it because it takes, Kevin, you know, it takes years to get another trial. I mean, I don't see that happening for another 5 years. So we'll see what happens, but I don't see that being the case at all.
So where do we go from here? As my final question, where do we as Americans go from here to continue down the right path to fix systematic racism and make sure that if law enforcement is doing their job, they're doing it in such a manner that there isn't a loss of life, especially when it comes to individuals of color?
Well, I think politics is going to play a huge part in that. And I'm not a Donald Trump supporter, but I understand his supporters. I understand his supporters. They're saying, listen, the Joe Biden, Hillary Clinton, George Bush way, they're operating under a system that has racist laws. Okay. And like him or not, Donald Trump tried to change a few things. It's funny, he tried to change a few things and really install other things. You know, in terms of immigration, his stance was you could argue a little racist. You could argue a lot of racist. You could argue extremely racist. But his economic plan for Black people, you could argue, was trying to break that system. You could argue his plan on criminal justice reform, okay, it was breaking that system. So Donald Trump's a weird character because in some aspects he did some things that were out of the box in terms of his foreign policy, you know, not getting into wars, which is huge. I love that part, you know, and of not sending our troops. That's more of a democratic liberal type value. So he was kind of, so long story short, how do you solve it? I think we got to get more outsiders that think along with us whether you're conservative or liberal. I think that's how you make true change. You know, I'm a big Obama person. I thought Obama tried to make that change because he wasn't in political office for a long time. I think those type of people who actually live in the real world, you know, Obama wasn't a politician for a long time. You know, he was a community guy like us. So, I mean, he climbed up the ranks extremely quickly. But I think we got to get more outsiders who think like us, who can change the laws. That's the only realistic way, you know. And also, you know, in terms of the economy, we got to build more systems for minorities to succeed before they can be in positions to influence those type of changes, you know, which is huge. The fact of the matter is that, Kevin, you know, the economy and having money in your pocket, that's American. That's really going to make change. You know, we live in a capitalist society, and mathematically in a capitalist society, you're going to have winners and losers. That's fact. Okay. In order for us to see, you got winners and losers. I'm not saying it's a bad thing because some other countries, you have all losers. Okay. And socialism, communism, but there's going to be winners and losers. So how do you give everyone an equal opportunity to become a winner? And right now we systematically don't have an equal playing field.
We want to thank you very much for being a part of this conversation, Nubi.
Kevin, appreciate it. Always an honor.
We're going to step aside. And when we come back, more Monday Night Talk right here on 95.9 WATD. Stay tuned.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Hey, it's Jeff from Brennan Smoke Shop. I gotta give credit where credit is due. Al Gamash & Son, Michael Green Painting, and Foley Electric. Without these local contractors, Brennan Smoke Shop would be ugly. Every store we open, these guys get better and better at building them out. Take the new store in Hudson, New Hampshire, for instance. We put the display cases and the huge, absolutely enormous walk-in humidor on the same light switch. Thank you, Foley Electric. Justin Gamash, the and son, put a ramp in for the two-wheel dolly that carries the product from our local wholesaler, William Zoll & Son. Michael Green Painting. Oh my God, dude. They're like thing one, thing two, thing three, thing four, except they put paint on, not take it off. Come see their workmanship at our new store in Hudson, New Hampshire, June 2021. Brennan's Smoke Shop, the best smoke shop in Massachusetts and soon New Hampshire. Customers must be 21 years of age or older, and proper ID is required.
Download previous episodes of Monday Night Talk and listen to them anywhere. Check out 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Right, we're back, and this is the final segment of Monday Night Talk. And it's, you know, I think each segment is great onto its own, but I'm sorry. This is just going to be all out fun because I got a great guy who's joining me to talk about something I think you're going to like as well. If you're a Patriots fan, we're a couple of weeks removed from the draft. And a fantastic spending spree prior to that. Who would I talk to about this? But probably one of the number one writers for Barstool Sports, none other than the great Jerry Thornton, who I didn't realize has a green thumb, but that's a story for another day. No. Jerry, how are you?
I'm great. Explain to your audience that I was doing some planting for the Irish Rose. Some others say I do it once a year. I jump on that grenade and then I have a cigar and sit outside or whatever. I'm not out there, you know, yeah, out Jerry, here in the fields. We work for our meals or anything.
Oh, no. Yeah, but that was the Green Thumb. I thought that was your MMA name, Jerry the Green Thumb Thornton. You know, where you kind
I've been called worse.
Almost like WWE wrestling, where, you know, you get that one, you know, wrestler who uses, you know, this taped thumb to put it into their neck, you know?
Yeah, but technically I'm Jerry the Green Nerd is my my name, my wrestling thing. As I'm sitting here wearing a Lord of the Rings sweatshirt.
I love it.
This is what you're catching me with. And how do I sound, first of all?
You sound fantastic.
Okay, good. More importantly, how do I look? Because really, that's what I'm going for now. Like in 2021, I'm obsessed with my appearance. I'm trying to be dashing. That's what I've decided. Like, that's my ultimate goal. Like, you watch an old Turner Classic movie and you look at, I don't know, Cary Grant, and you go, that man's just dashing. And I've never been described as that. I've never dashed. I don't even know how to dash. So I've dashed some hopes of my parents and my teachers, but I'm thrilled to be talking to you again, Kevin. It's been way too long.
I would say, for two gentlemen who have beautiful wives, I would say that from one married guy to another, you are dashing.
Oh my gosh. Well, let's not let the ladies know about this. And you and I can kind of just change our relationship, just tweak it slightly. That would be great. No, I've seen you with your lovely bride, and I can tell you that, like me, when you're together, it looks like a kidnapping in progress. Like, I go to a store with the Irish Rose, and people are checking their phones for Amber Alerts. Like, miss, blink SOS right now with your eyes, and I will get security, and we'll haul this creep out of here. But no, somehow I tricked her.
Well, you've tricked her for a long amount of time, so you know, whatever you've done is it's working. It's actually sunk in, and it's a reality now.
Sure. Well, the other day I tweeted out a thing, and this relates to the topic we're going to talk about. But I said, you know, after 27 years, I've decided to get divorced because I realized the Irish Rose couldn't really love me because she didn't trade up to get me. And a lot of people like read the first sentence and like were deeply concerned. I'm like, oh, my God, I appreciate that anyone would care about my personal life. Everything's great. But my point being that the Patriots got exactly the quarterback that I wanted them to get, that I was on record as saying that they were going to get, that they wanted to get in the draft. And there are people in Boston media who are perpetually angry at this team and perpetually these anti-Belichick extremists who will go to any length to say that everything is a disaster, who said, no, they couldn't really have wanted Mac Jones because they stayed at number 15 and let him fall to them. If they really wanted him, they would have moved up. This is the insanity that I've made a career pushing back against. And I'm happy to push back against it with you.
I will say this, though. It's interesting enough to say, and you know, Tom Brady's first NFL pro offensive coordinator, Charlie Weiss,
yes,
he knew the secret sauce long before we did. He does a regular podcast, and he was touting this guy. He loves Mac Jones. And that's for folks who are just tuning in. I mean, that's, you know, surprise, they took a quarterback and it fell to him. Mac Jones from the Tide, you know, Alabama. Fantastic.
Right. And you can't always look at what somebody does in college and extrapolate that to the pros. That's why teams spend $2 million a franchise on evaluating people, and they know everything from the size of their hands to how they answer crazy questions, like whatever. So no, you don't know. But when I watched this guy in college, I said, okay, he's got the traits I'm looking for. Yes, he's not as athletic as the quarterbacks that were drafted ahead of him in the pure sense of being able to run and move and throw on the run and all this other stuff. To me, the reason I wanted him is I think he's a referendum on how you feel the quarterback position is evolving. Do you think that it has to be a guy with the skill set of like a Patrick Mahomes or Justin Herbert, you know, just to name a recent guy? Do they always have to be leaving the pocket and making second effort plays when the scheme breaks down or whatever? Well, I watched the Super Bowl. I don't know if you saw that. It was a little game that they played the first Sunday in February. The guy who won that happened to be not the guy you would want to have go running and throwing a football on the run. And by the way, he's 43. And he beat three guys who made their career reputation, three quarterbacks, on doing exactly the kind of play that we're talking about. And that's Drew Brees and Aaron Rodgers, and very much to a larger extent, Patrick Mahomes. And he played circles around them. So that's why I think I like Mac Jones. I think it's good that you can be a running, throwing quarterback. It's helpful. It's not mandatory. It's a nice skill set to have, but I think ultimately it's like a pitcher who can hit. Like, wow, Greg Maddux helped his own cause with two RBIs. Okay, great. Pedro Martinez never took the bat off his shoulder, and he was the greatest pitcher that you or I ever saw. So I'm really, if I haven't let you know this by now, I'm really excited about the whole Mac Jones thing and how they were able to get him without mortgaging the future.
Yeah, there was the thing that I think a lot of people were expecting. Yeah, if you look at the national sports writers, the pundits who are on national shows, a lot of them had the Peter Schragers from from NFL, the NFL Network, saying, "Oh, he's gonna." You had all of them saying that the Patriots were going to trade into the top 10. When was the last time the Patriots did that with Bill Belichick in the war room?
I'm going to try to remember these exact numbers. I believe in his now 22 drafts. In the first round, they've made 18 trades, four of which were trades up. The others were all trades down or even out of the round. So, and those were, two of them were like back end of the draft. So Dante Hightower, they moved up about eight spots to get him. Chandler Jones, and they did those two in the same year, moved up a few picks. Back in the day, 2003, it was Ty Warren. They were sitting at 14. Right. They wanted him. They moved up to 13. So not a huge jump. Most of the time, it's just, all right, like, here's a great example. This is 2008. So they were at the seventh pick and the Jets were at sixth. And the story going around was that Belichick was furiously working the phones, trying to move up ahead, to leapfrog ahead of the Jets, because there was a guy he wanted. So one of the writers called Belichick at 5 o'clock the day before the draft. He was on his way to his car because he was going to his son's lacrosse practice. Not a game, a practice. So draft day comes. He doesn't make a move. The Jets end up taking the guy that was rumored to be going to New England, Vernon Golston, thermonuclear draft bust, a defensive lineman who was out of football in 2 years. Instead, the Pats sat there and moved back three spots and got a Gerard Mayo, who was like a team captain for 10 years and is a coach now. And just like, so never believe the hype. I do believe that the Patriots were making phone calls, due diligence. You look at those teams in the top 10, Denver, hey, what would it take to drop you back to 15? That kind of thing. But I think they were willing to move up if they sensed they had to get Jones. But once he got past Carolina at 8 and then Denver at 9, I started looking at he could actually fall to them. And then there was the trade. Chicago made a trade at 11. And that was to get Justin Fields. Right. And then I'm thinking, okay, it really comes down to Minnesota was once pick ahead of the Pats at 14. They've made a trade. And I'm freaking out. Like, I'm just sweating like, it was the SATs again. And it was the Jets. And as soon as I heard it was the Jets, I said, we've got our guy. And if you recall, the Pats wasted no time. And by the way, all right, a curse on all these teams in, say, the top five who use up all 10 of their minutes. Yep. Jacksonville use up all 10 of their minutes. Like, dudes,
come on.
You're all new staff because the old staff got fired. You knew when you got the job what you were doing. And now you're going to sit there, and then the Jets took all their 10 minutes. Yeah, the Patriots just said, what are we going to do? Belichick took the time for the cameras to say, you're good with this, you're good with that. But they got the guy that he worked out personally that he wanted and I wanted. And I'll get to your next question. But to me, it felt like, and boy, here's a blast from the past too. 2004, they needed a nose tackle to replace Ted Mount Washington.
Right.
Exactly. Ted Washington, a man who, we're not sure when he weighed, his mass could only be estimated by the way light bends around him from distant stars.
Yep.
And Wilfork was expected to go maybe sixth, certainly the top 10. And he hit a certain point where I looked at the teams and I said, I know none of these teams is looking for defensive tackle. And they sat at 21 and they got him. Now, does anyone want to argue that they didn't really want Vince Wilfork because they didn't move up to get him? You want to championship as a rookie, won one in his final year too, played here for 10 years at a high level. He was beloved. And sometimes, Belichick preaches patience. Let the board come to you. And in this case, it most assuredly did.
Looking at the rest of the Patriots picks, mm-hmm. Was there anything? They traded up and they got another Alabama kid, Christian Barmore.
Yes. And here's where I'm angry and bitter about that. Okay. My oldest brother, Jack, who raised me to be the unrepentant draft geek that I am. And he's got a history of making correct picks. I talked to him the day before, and he said, here's a guy I want to put on your radar screen, Christian Barmore from Alabama. And I didn't even think that defensive tackle would be that big a priority because they spent so much, Devin Gonchaw, and they brought back Lawrence Guy or whatever. So when he got that pick right, I was furious. Having said that, that's a terrific pick. That guy, NFL.com had him listed as their number 13 overall player at any position. The consensus opinion is he's the best run stuffer at his position in this class, which is a huge area of need, no pun intended. And, you know, a guy that, you know, not only fits a need, but, you know, most of the sites, the draft sites, have listed him among the you know, the best bargains in the entire draft. Like a draft steal is probably a better term for it. So I'm really excited because I think, you know, we can debate whether Jones is going to be the starting quarterback in week one, but I'm next to him. I'm excited to see if Barmore is really worthy of the pre-draft hype.
Yeah. If you're just tuning in, we are speaking with the great Jerry Thornton, not only best-selling author, but also a writer for Barstool Sports, talking a little Patriots, teasing the draft, talking a little free agency. You know, we're sitting here, we talked a little bit about Christian Barmore. How about as far as the signings, the free agent signings, any surprises there where they loaded up on tight end, wide receiver, and defensive, you know, the defense?
Yep, and the secondary. And look, you know what? The whole thing was mind-boggling because how many years have we tried to just kind of tamp down our expectations? You know what I mean? Like we're the kids of Christmas when our friends are all opening up, like, you know, new PlayStations, we're the ones who are getting socks, you know, a nice winter coat, like all these things we're really going to need. They're really practical, but like, there's no sexiness to them. And with rare exceptions, I mean, Stephon Gilmore was out of the clouds, a surprise and arguably the best free agent signing that they've ever made. So I expected them to be aggressive just by virtue of the fact that they had, I think, going in the third biggest cap number to spend and a down year where the cap got cut because of all the lost revenue for COVID. So it was this weird kind of outlier in the marketplace compared to what it usually is. And they went in there and they took advantage of it. But I'd written a list of the guys that I wanted. And I said, well, you know, Hunter Henry clearly is the first tight end and Belichick loves him. But, you know, give me Jonnu Smith from, who's, you know, a terrific second, you know, plan B. And defensive end, I really liked,
Judon?
Yeah, exactly. Matt Judon. And okay, that would be a really nice get. And then they get two of those guys on the first day and they get Hunter Henry on the third day. And again, to go back to that Christmas analogy, like, I'm like, this is really exciting. I'm not sure I'm satisfied. Like all of a sudden I'm like Veruca Salt. Like, please, Daddy, I want more. I want a nice quarterback. How come we can't have a nice quarterback? Get it for me. But, you know, they upgraded the wide receiver position, which they badly needed, you know, Nelson Aguilar and Kendrick Bourne from San Francisco. And, you know, okay, did they get any of the top like four or five wide receivers on board? No, but it's more than just how are they ranked and which guy you got. It's who's going to fit what we're trying to do. And that's a difficult thing, especially wide receiver at that in that team. Like that is a, you know, not everybody can handle it. It's not so much about what your foot speed is. It's how you work that muscle between your ear holes. You know, you get these guys like Rob Gronkowski, maybe I don't want him playing, a game of Jeopardy with my life on the line, but had that IQ for figuring this out. You know, a guy like Malcolm Mitchell is a rookie. It took him some time, but he figured out, and had he not got hurt, would have had a really successful career. So, you know, those two receivers are obviously tremendous upgrades from what they had. And then, sneaky Jalen Mills out of the Eagles, a defensive back who can play any position. I mean, you look at his snap count by different positions on the field, you know, one week, he'll play cornerback and play 60 snaps there. The next week, he'll play four different positions. He'll play 15 of that one, 17 in the slot, you know, 18 at strong safety or whatever. And just that, which is such a Patriots thing, you know, like game plan specific and a guy who can move all over. Yeah, exactly. So unquestionably, they upgraded the talent level. They did exactly what they needed to do, left a little cap room for other moves that might shake loose. But, you know, had the most aggressive free agency. And according to a lot of the experts, had the best draft. So we'll see.
I will say, not to digress any at all, but a nice Willy Wonka reference there. Kudos to you for throwing it out.
Never that far away from one. Good day to you, sir. I'm sorry.
The one thing that I was going to ask you is we were talking about, you know, drafting, knowing that they had a big problem as far as their run defense. You know, some of the guys that they brought in, Devon Gottschalk, Henry Anderson, about Bama. I mean, and then you're still bringing back Lawrence Guy, who, you know, you think of like a Lawrence Guy, and he's kind of like an under the radar kind of signing. And I remember when they signed him from Baltimore, and I'm like, and he's just been that quintessential guy that you don't think much of, but he's played a role. How do you feel that all these additional signings on the D line are going to really help this defense?
Oh, but positively. And Godjohn in particular, who's had some good games against the Patriots. If there's one that it was a bit of a head scratcher for me, it was bringing back Dedrick Wise. Now, not saying Dedrick Wise is a terrible player. Like anyone, he popped some, but the most coveted thing for any Patriot player is that second contract. Very rarely does a guy get it. Obviously, rarer still does anyone get a third one. The fact that Dedrick Wise got the second one is curious. And if you remember, he came out of that draft, it was 2017, I think, where they only had four picks. Yep. You know, one got taken away because the NFL doesn't understand middle school level physics. And how air pressure is affected by cold, but that's shelve that for another conversation. Sure. But them getting him, not a guy I equate with that run stuffing, edge setting end either, but I think just as a guy that they're going to put in there in a rotation that they love to do in the front end. But, you know, anyone that's going to help Dante Hightower after missing a year because of the opt-out. I mean, that right there, bringing him back is a colossal win for this team. And, you know, then they can fill in around with the loss of Patrick Chung. But beyond that, like really, besides Chung and Joe Tooney, who I think that they've successfully been able to replace, they didn't make any major losses. And that's all they've done is make additions.
But what you mentioned Chung, and you anticipated my next question. You were talking additions. Let's talk subtractions. Mm-hmm. You know, you're losing Chung. He didn't play last year because of COVID. And then Julian Edelman decides that he's also going to, his knee has had enough and it's time to go. At least we hope. You know, there is the thought that he may find himself down with the southern version of the New England Patriots. That remains to be seen.
Yeah, I'm not buying that.
I'm not buying it either.
Right. Gronk never made that heartfelt farewell. It was like a tweet, Jed, going to go take my talents to selling CBD oil. No, CBD. Yeah. Charlie Daniels Band of CDB. But no, I don't see Edelman coming back. And yeah, obviously there's a gigantic hole left in that offense because of him. So I wrote a piece the other day on Barstool, just trying to, you know, as a guide for myself, like how to cope with the wide receiver situation. But also I thought that not because I'm a hero, but because I thought, you know, maybe my courage could help inspire others to work through their own issues. Very selfless and giving it in that way. And try to find ways that, okay, you know, how is this wide receiver core that we all agree is much better, but hardly among the top in the league. How is it going to shake out? I think the fact that they got the number two targets at tight end is going to help a lot, because they're going to play a lot of one back, two tight end sets where by simple numbers, you only need two wide receivers. You only have room on the field for two. You know, they drafted Devin Asiasi as a tight end the year before. Now, he's 250 pounds, so I mean, no one's going to associate him with a wide receiver. But can he be that guy who's, you know, a bigger guy who can create mismatches and be like a, you know, a guy who can slide into the middle? And brace yourself for this, Kevin. This is going to sound like crazy talk, and you might want to have me committed. I wouldn't object if you did. Maybe this is the year that N'Keal Harry finally figures it out. His rookie year, obviously, he was hurt for half of it, and Brady, you know, completely tuned him out. Guys like Matt Chatham, who I respect a lot, who would break down game film, says he was open a lot, and the quarterback, Kim, you know, Newton, just ignored him. You know, maybe he's a guy as a part-time slot guy. He's never going to outrun anybody, but maybe he can use his size and his physicality. I mean, it wasn't a shock when he went in the first round 2 years ago. He was projected to be a first-round pick. He was considered to be one of the top 3 to 5 prospects in the draft. It's just, it's been an unmitigated disaster. But, you know, if he can step up, that solves a lot of problems. No one will ever replace Edelman. But, and here's kind of my sleeper pick for that. And that's Gunnar Olszewski.
Oh.
And the reason I say this is because his career has followed the exact same career path as Edelman, as Wes Welker, and as Troy Brown. Three guys who weren't much thought of, seventh-round picks or undrafted free agents like him, made a mark on special teams, held on to the job, and then after a couple of years of not really being involved in the offense – all three of those guys, it clicked in for them. And with experience and just that aforementioned like brain power that all three of those guys had, turned out to be some of the greatest Patriots of all time. So who knows? You know, they don't need him to be Edelman, but if he can be a 80 catch guy, you know, move the sticks, just be a possession receiver, that would be tremendous.
I'm gonna give you my sleeper. We got a couple of minutes left, but I'll throw the sleeper out there. Trey Nixon from UCF.
Yeah, and I know, who knows? Again, the last draft pick of the historic figure in Patriots lore, that international man of mystery of Ernie Adams. And he liked the kid enough, and, you know, Belichick referenced the time when they went to Ernie and said, all right, who do you like on the board? It was the seventh round, and he pulled off David Givens. David Givens was an 80 catcher. Well, at least 1 year, he had like 869 yards and won 2 championships. So don't know much about Nixon, to be honest with you, but it wouldn't be the last time, the first time that they found a sleeper in that round. They did it with Givens, and Lord knows they did it with Edelman, who was a quarterback out of Kent State. So your lips to God's ears, Kevin. I will give him a kind of a red shirt freshman year. You know, and then they bring them along slowly. But, you know, a couple of years down the road, I'd love to see it.
We get about 2 or 3 minutes left here. But I want to thank you for joining us. Looking ahead, we know training camp is still down the road. Do you want to, you know, tap into your pigskin Nostradamus as to what we're going to see in training camp and the early conversations regarding the starting quarterback job?
Yeah, I think it's not, you know, Belichick, of course, said Cam Newton's a quarterback, which is exactly what you say. It's what Kyle Shanahan is saying in San Francisco. And they use 3 first rounders and a 3rd rounder to get their guy. Yep. It's just, you know, it's that bluffing thing that you do. I think it's, I'm going to use a Ted Wells expression. I think it's more probable than not that Mac Jones gets the job. You know, taking Trevor Lawrence off the board because, you know, he's a unique case. He's a generational prospect. I think of the other 4 quarterbacks, Jones is the most NFL ready. The guy that is more capable than the other ones of being plugged in and playing. He had 4,500 yards last year, an NCAA record 77.4% completions, 41 touchdowns and 4 picks. He played out of his mind in the championship game against a little team named Ohio State. You know, so I think he's got he's more mature in terms of experience. I'm not talking about personality or any of that nonsense. Yeah. Who knows? But so I give him the upper hand. But I'm not ruling out the possibility that they kind of do like Tua Tagovailoa last year. He was a sixth pick, and he didn't start for a few games. Justin Herbert didn't start week one. Patrick Mahomes didn't start until the last game of his rookie season. So I'd say crazier things would have happened. But with the problem with the Patriots is you couldn't have two different styles. You know, so you're going to build an offense around Cam Newton and then plan on transitioning it midway through the season to Mac Jones. That's, you know, that's taking an SUV and all of a sudden trying to like turn it into a sports car. So I like to think that's going to happen. I want the Jones era to begin as soon as possible. What do you think? How do you see this playing out?
I'll be brief because we got about a minute left here, but I think you're on track. You're right. I think they want to install him, and then when it comes time for the Bucks to visit the Patriots this year, we're going to see the Tom Brady and Tom Brady Pat Du squaring off for. I think they said that it might be a Turkey Day type an affair. We'll see.
But the very thought of that, I'm not lying to you. I got like a shiver up my spine when you said that. You can't see it because I'm not really manly, but there are hairs, the small hairs I have on my arm stand up. Like, I was picturing Jimmy G coming here and facing off against Brady, but the next generation of Patriots quarterback facing the biggest star in the history of Boston sports, and 1 year after he left, it would be huge no matter what, but putting it on Thanksgiving Day, I'm not going to be able to eat or drink.
No,
I'll be like on a hunger strike.
Well, Jerry, I want to thank you so much as always. And we'll definitely have to have you back, you know, maybe around training camp and see how things are playing out.
I'd love that. And the good Lord willing, if the crease don't rise, they'll let the press back there. I love going. I went once last year. I'd love to go back several times, and you get so much more out of it. It'll be another step back towards normal, as we'll see in you in person sometime soon.
Sounds like a plan. There he is, the great Jerry Thornton, best-selling author and writer for Barstool Sports. That is all the program that we have for this week. Until next week at 6:15 p.m., have a great night.